Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
It is.
Welcome to Death of Funny Business with Tash and Becky in the afternoon.
We like to talk about death and its business.
Our dead parents are really proud somewhere.
Too.
that Coke Zero is really like,
yeah, I was gonna say,
buzzer through our veins.
This energy. I actually don't think we've ever both been as energetic before. Normally okay. One of us is off kilter.
Okay, genuinely, I think this Coca-Cola, we both decided to have a Coke just before we started because I nearly
other brands are available.
I nearly fell asleep on the train and Becky was like, had like a crazy work day, and then I was literally like, we should have Coca-Cola Zero, and now we're like both caffeinated to shit and I'm
oh is
worried.
There caffeine in that?
Yeah, you fucking moron. What
I just thought mean? There was no caffeine
sorry
in
that
those.
Was really mean. I didn't mean really to call rude. You a fucking moron. That's really harsh. I'd like to take that back off the record.
Take it off.
Thank you. Edit that out. Thank you, Yasmin.
We're live. Death of Funny Business.
Yes.
Tuesday, 5 p.m.
5 o'clock. Congratulations.
For making it through the week.
Through the week. No, the beginning. This is the beginning of the week. It's Tuesday.
Well, no, I mean since last week.
Yes. Well done, everybody. You're still alive.
Some of us have died.
Unlike our mum and dad.
They're just getting deader and deader.
They are every day just further and further away from them being alive. Okay.
Maybe they're
dark.
Coming back. Maybe there's a cycle.
Maybe it is one big time loop. Maybe we're in the Matrix.
I don't know.
No, Natasha. Should we tell them what's happening today?
Oh my God. Okay. This is a really exciting episode because we have one of the most amazing guests that I think I feel rude saying that.
Why?
Because all the other guests are amazing.
No, but she's amazing
is something
in a
else.
Different way.
She is a renowned expert in the field
of grief.
Grief and science.
Science. She's a real scientist.
Professor.
Tell me who she is.
Psychologist. She is Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, and she's the Professor of Psychology at the University of Arizona, where she leads the Grief, Loss and Social Stress Lab. And she is the author of The Grieving Brain and her recent book, The Grieving Body. I think most people have probably heard of who she is. She is
described on the streets as that bitch of the industry. She is the queen of grief. No, it's true.
On the streets.
On the streets.
And all the academic journals as well.
100%. Yeah, 100%. She's like the queen of grief. She is the leading human being on it. So pretty, pretty cool to have her today.
And why I am really excited to have her on is because, you know, last week I said that after interviewing and chatting and discussing with all these guests that we've had, I feel like I want to write, not a book, but I feel like I want to collate all of these ideas and put them together because I think we've got so much to talk about and so much to share, and I think that they're all in different episodes and I'd like to put them all in one place and I'd like to bullet point them and speak them out into this microphone.
We should like make this a vlog proper, you know?
I think we should.
A vlog? What's wrong with me?
But why this is so exciting, having Mary Frances O'Connor on, is because we've talked about the emotional impact of grief and how it's kind of stored in our bodies and how it makes us feel. And it's like, we've had a bad day. It's okay to have a bad day. You know, all of these amazing
emotional
kind of responses. But she's going to tell us why. And she's going to validate them.
Yes, she is. And I also find it interesting because she talks a lot about the physicality of grieving and how grief and trauma gets stored but also presented as symptomatically in the body, which I can relate to a lot because all my trauma is held in my soul. No, in my
soul.
Physical body. Like, in my physical body. Like,
and
all
soul.
Of the pain and shit. It's, like, all just probably trauma. So, really, really excited to talk to her today. Hopefully she can uncover some myths and facts and tell us the secrets. Tell us all her secrets. Wow, the caffeine really is getting to my mouth.
And also
today.
It'd be great if she can, because I've tried to read one of her journals and it's pretty sciencey. It's pretty dense, isn't it?
And we're not, I wouldn't call us scientific.
Honey, we're academics.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have good, you went to a grammar school, so.
We're academics.
Yeah, you went to the clever school.
No. Well, it wasn't actually. I was at the bottom of that school.
What did you do for your A-levels? Go on, do tell the public.
History. Most love at Henry VIII. English. Mm-hmm. And theatre studies.
We did theatre studies. Mm. You cheeky little... You never told me that.
Oh, yeah.
You want to know what mine were?
Go on.
I did English, music, and drama. I'm going to be poor forever.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
Let's not manifest that.
Anyway...
Anyway, how have you been?
How have I been?
Ooh.
Oh, I find this question really difficult. I've been really good. I don't want to talk about the sun. That's a cliche.
You can talk about the sun.
I had a really nice weekend chilling in a garden and
lovely
doing things. And I'm actually fine. I mean, I'm a little bit apprehensive because it's the anniversary of Dad's death on Sunday,
yes,
13th of April.
How many years?
7.
Well done.
I think. Well done.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah.
7 years. How are you feeling?
I don't know.
Do you know what I think always about anniversaries? The lead up is quite anticlimactic in a weird way.
Well, I think the lead up is worse.
The lead up is... It makes it anticlimactic in a way.
On the day, yeah. I mean, I think we've always made, my family have made quite a big thing out of the day. It's been really? This sort of doomsday. Like, it's just that we all know it's coming and it's like, oh, what should we do? Let's have some kind of like family time. And as lovely as that is, it can sometimes feel really intense. And actually what I think we should be doing on that day is celebrating our lives and talking about him and making sure that we're there for each other as a family. But I also think it's really nice that we're still living, because that's what he would have wanted us to do. He would have want us to go to his bench and sit there and cry and read him a poem.
Yeah, no.
So there's no point in doing that. But I do think that for me, the lead up is the most difficult, because it's a reminder of him being ill. That was the time when he was ill.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this the other day and I was like, why are we not celebrating birthdays more? Because anniversaries are just the reminder of the day that someone died and was in their worst state, right? Whereas birthdays is like, that was the beginning of someone's life.
But do we not celebrate? But we celebrate birthdays every year.
Yeah, but not for someone that's dead. Oh, I don't. Maybe that's a me problem.
I see what you're saying. Okay, no, because I don't celebrate mum's birthday. I get what you're saying. Sorry. I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, I mean, that does make sense, actually. You should celebrate their birth again, I guess. But then, I suppose...
Then they're dead. I don't know.
But then I suppose the... Because I think, okay, to counteract your point...
Dun, dun, dun.
If we're about to get to an anniversary and it is a sad day, would not celebrating it make it almost worse again? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it actually... Because to say to your point, you know, oh, I'll do family time when I go to his bench and read a poem. My initial reaction was to tell you to go like skydiving or something like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that's always something I wanted to do. I don't think Tabby and my dad would be that keen, but like do something. My dad would actually. My dad's been talking about going skydiving.
Something fearless,
But do you know, it's something like a memory that's like a bit more robust than like just having dinner or.
Last year I went away. With best friend, and I'm doing the same.
Oh, on the anniversary?
Yeah, and I'm doing the same on Sunday.
Where
for a few days.
Going?
It's Portugal.
Okay. She likes to tell me these things. I wasn't invited.
It's fine. Sorry.
Don't mind.
You're invited next year, 13th of April. Put it in your diary.
Okay.
I just thought actually maybe that's a good thing to escape from the day and just celebrating with friends and just kind of doing things that I love and being with people that I love but in a more casual setting, in a more natural setting.
To be fair, I've done that before. Like, I remember when I used to live back home, like, with my mate, my best mate, Ruth, like, quite consequentially, I ended up being with her on mum's anniversary, like specifically quite a lot on that day for some reason. But, like, kind of by accident.
Okay.
Or she'd, like, come over to... I don't really know. Or, like, be with a friend, but, yeah.
But I think when you're... So the family unit, right, was once upon a time, however that looked like. As soon as someone's removed from that, it's the elephant in the room. So when you all come together again, it's so obvious that someone's missing. So and I think that's the difficult part. And there's not many times that I am with my family, you know, complete, even without my dad, but you know, my mum and my brother and myself. That doesn't often happen. So when we are together,
gosh,
it feels...
Oh, I forgot that your mum's in Sweden now. Yeah, so she doesn't live you don't me. Even, like, you can't really even do anniversary, really. I
mean, well, it would be flying over there to make an event of it, you know?
Well, that's even more... See, I was imagining, like, you rolling over to Sandwich Wells and being like, hi, mum, but she's not there anymore.
No, it's
no, that's much more of a thing. Yeah.
It's a very complex issue, and I'm not really sure. And there is no right or wrong, I guess. And there's a big... No. I have a lot of guilt for not being there for my mum as well. But I'm trying to work out kind of what's best for me as
but
well.
But she's also, like, she's over there. Like, she's got her thing going.
Yeah.
Like, she's living her best life
exactly.
up in the Swedes.
Exactly. And with the Swedes.
With the Swedes.
And I think, yeah, I think it's fine to kind of escape from it. But also, I'm going to try and make sure that I allow some time on Sunday to really, you know, not to avoid it altogether. I think that's the other worry, is it can be very easy just to forget about it. And I, as you know, and as, like, I'm sure the listeners know, that I have a tendency of pushing the emotions aside because it's just too much to deal with. Mm. So, do you know what? Maybe I'll do some breath work.
Maybe you will. And also, like, I will say as well, you may as well take the pressure off yourself for that day, because grieving is hard every day. Mm. So it doesn't really...
It's not just for that day.
A car
outside.
And here a car.
I know.
It's hard every day. So, like, why... Why force your? Why force it all into one day?
Yeah. And it's okay. And it's okay to be sad every day. And that leads us on to a lovely play that we went to go and watch.
Oh yes, we went to see Sad Book, by our lovely choreographed and directed by our lovely guest. I think
Andrea Walker.
Week? Andrea Walker. Not last week, but the week prior.
Yeah.
My solo show.
Solo show.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And it was a very moving piece of contemporary dance mixed with storytelling, and it was really beautiful. And we were at the Hackney Empire, which is a gorgeous
stunning
theater.
Venue. Yeah.
And then they did a talk after with
Michael Rosen, the
Thank
author.
Thank you so much.
Who was narrating
Everybody who doesn't know who Michael Rosen is, we realised that we did know who Michael Rosen was, because we knew what Sabbath was, but what we didn't make the connection is he's the fella who wrote We're Going on a Bear Hunt.
Did anyone know that?
So I was like, oh, shit, I completely forgot. Because me and Becky both knew Sad Book before.
Yeah.
So we kind of like was like, oh, yeah, we know Sad Book, like, blah, blah, blah. And then we realised, oh, he's going on a bear. Anyway, he's such an interesting, fun fella. And he's got so many fun, quirky stories. So it was really interesting to hear from him and about the process.
Yeah, and I think it was so, I mean, it was... He was narrating. He was sitting at the front of the stage, narrating the book as everything else
as
was
as the dance
production was
and,
happening behind.
Yeah, as
behind
the dance
him.
And animation, and it was a really, really, very intense show. To be fair, like, there was a lot of feelings of discomfort, and they really created this atmosphere of uncomfortability and pain, but also a lot of joy, which I think sometimes can get a bit lost, especially. For me personally, in like contemporary dance and stuff like that, but it was so beautifully done.
Yeah,
and you could really feel the story and all the emotion through the choreography and through the direction. So yeah, Andrea Walker,
it was amazing. And one of the actors said that he had a photo of his son.
Yeah, the guy playing
Michael.
So he could
really, you know, evoke those emotions.
So
and
beautiful.
So everything was really purposeful, and it was heartfelt, wasn't it? All the actors
very,
really meant what
truthful.
They were saying and dancing. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was really
truthful.
Good. It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think the book, it's quite simple. But I didn't know how they were going to do it, because it's like, I am sad.
Yes.
Why are you sad?
Yeah, it's very... Because it's
What's it about again? It's about his son.
His six-year-old. I want to say six. His son died very young, and he wrote about how that affected him through the grieving process, and but also just through life in general, and about how feeling sad or depressed or feeling things when you're happy, like, but also still feeling sad. It's very simple, but it's very. It's very honest, and it's very clear, and it's the book's often used to help children with grief and kind of a bit more of a adult view on it. But Yeah, it's. I think the way that the book and the choreography and the direction just really blended really, really well together, and
yeah,
it was really, really beautiful.
And I think that's something that's, and we've spoken a lot recently about.
I cried.
Children. You did cry.
I did. I shed a little tear. Mm. It was when he was talking about the birthdays thing. He's like, he loves birthdays. It's, he was talking about how, because you kind of do the whole journey of like him being very sad about it, and then at the end, there's kind of this conversation about when do we smile again and let's remember the things that we're happy about. And he talks about how I love birthdays and blowing out the candles. There always has to be candles at this, you know, these birthday parties. And I just thought it was really sweet and
sad. Is it appropriate to talk about what we noticed?
What did we notice?
The light flickering.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I think we can. It was special.
Tash, look, I'm going to talk about myself in third person. I had a bit of a spooky, witchy moment, and I was like...
That made me cry.
Yeah,
that made me shiver.
You got all
I was
funny
really...
about it. But the moment he started, Michael started talking about Eddie, who's his son, one of the lights in the auditorium started blinking on and off.
But only when he was
and
talking.
And then I at the moment he said his name, and then I bumped Becky on the arm and was like, look, he's here.
It was,
I know, but I genuinely do believe in like spirits and shit like that. And I was like, oh, he's like saying like, yeah, because Michael was talking about wanting to upset the cat or something, and like Eddie being cross about it or something like that. And I just found it so funny that the light was literally flashing in this box, like as he was saying it. And then the moment they stopped talking about him, it stopped.
And then they would interview someone at Child Bereavement, who's actually that was really interesting as well.
Yeah.
We should definitely. Look into that.
Yes.
Having someone have her on as guest, but then the lights stopped flickering. It was just, it could be a coincidence, but I like to think that Eddie was there.
Yeah,
and it
I'd
was
like
just
to
a,
as
this
well.
Really beautiful moment.
I think it was really beautiful. Maybe we can get Michael on. Maybe he believes in the. Hopefully he.
It'd be great to get Michael on.
We should ask.
That would be really, really cool. Anyway, we're going to go to a break, but we'll be back with Mary Frances O'Connor. And if anyone has just tuned in, she is a professor and psychologist, and she's going to be chatting all things neuroscience and grief.
Yep.
So stay with us. See you after the break.
Bye.
FUBAR Radio.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like, your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
What the hell? 12 with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Ephraim Mason-Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is a legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, you know, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death, a funny business. Hello, Mary, can you hear us?
Yes, it's so good to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. And also thank you so much for sending your book, The Grieving Body. It's You've started it, haven't you, Tasha?
Yes, I've been really enjoying it.
Wonderful.
How are you doing this morning?
You know, it's just a beautiful day here in Tucson, Arizona.
Ah, lovely. Lovely. So we'd love to just jump straight in and talk to you a bit about your new book and your work. And I suppose for our listeners, obviously, there's a lot of understanding about how grief is a psychological experience. But you've worked a lot about how it affects the body too. And we'd love to know about all about the how it affects our body physically. And yeah, if you'd love to talk about that for a bit, we'd be more than interested.
I think most people are surprised after they lose a loved one how much they physically feel that. And, you know, and yet we know from research, from really big population level studies, that you really can die of a broken heart. So we know from a research study that you're 21 times more likely to die of a heart attack on the day that a loved one dies than any other day of your life.
Wow.
Which is a just shocking, shocking statistic, isn't it?
That's wild.
What happens? Why is that?
So this is part of what our research is now trying to figure out. Given that we know it's a fact, it's not just a metaphor, it means that the heart really is being impacted when we experience this loss, right? This sort of amputation of this person in our life. And so what we are learning is that part of our response to it is a stress response, and that can affect things like blood pressure and heart rate, things like our stress hormones, cortisol, and adrenaline. And so even if in most people, on average, we see a little bit of an increase in blood pressure and heart rate, and that usually returns to normal for most people, in some people, clearly we get outside the bounds of normal cardiovascular function where we get into a situation like a heart attack.
Gosh.
Wow.
Goodness me.
Is there any indication?
I know, I've just blown your mind, haven't I?
yeah, because I just thought dying of a broken heart was a bit of a myth as well. I just thought that can't be real. I mean, Tasha's has said before that you felt a lot of, like, you've got a lot of kind of chronic pain and a lot of your own issues. Can it impact that, or can it kind of bring those maybe existing issues up a bit more? Or
so that is the perfect question. You two could be scientists.
Because no.
Mary.
Tell my mum.
My dad's going to be so pleased.
As I was studying, you know, this physiological response to loss, what was also clear from the data was that it isn't just your heart that responds. And so we actually see increases in getting the pneumonia and the flu, getting worsening cancer. We see worsening COPD, right? The breathing, chronic pulmonary issues. And so that led me to say, well, how on earth could something like a loss be affecting all those different systems? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And so I started to think about loss is affecting our immune system. And our immune system affects every single organ, right? Mm. And so if you have rheumatoid arthritis, that more inflammation means you have joints that hurt more. But if you have asthma, more inflammation means it's harder to breathe. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So inflammation goes up in both cases. But what we see, just like you're saying you experienced, is that it's going to exhibit differently in each person.
Mm, that's so interesting. And when you say inflammation, is the correlation between the loss of someone and the emotional feeling and the way that your immune system reacts? Is that how the inflammation is increased?
You are asking each question that I have thought about. That's incredible.
Mary, stop. I'm blushing.
So what we don't know, actually, at this point, although we're starting to have some inklings as we do more studies, we don't know if people who have a stronger emotional response are also the ones who are having a stronger physiological response. So the old, old idea, the sort of Freudian idea, was that if we don't express our emotions, then we have more physical symptoms, right?
Yeah.
But that isn't really turning out to be true. We actually think people who are having more emotional difficulty are having more physical difficulty as well.
That's interesting.
So does that mean if we just shut down our grief, then we won't necessarily see it?
that goes against everything we've advocated for.
I think this is what it is. What we've seen is that mental health is really about flexibility. So it's about having a big toolkit of strategies of how to cope with these waves of grief. And occasionally, if you are walking into a podcast and you're feeling a lot of grief, it's okay to shut down and say, I'm going to pretend this hasn't happened. Uh-huh. I'm just going to focus on what I'm doing. I'm going to ignore those emotions completely. But if that's the only tool in your toolbox, that's probably not a great long-term set of strategies, right? To just keep shutting everything down. And that might be where we start to see the chronic stress that really takes a toll on the body. But if you also have strategies like, you know, instead it's Saturday afternoon and you could text your sister and talk with her, you know, and have a good cry, then that's another tool you have in your toolbox. So it's much more about being flexible and responding in lots of ways to what we're experiencing.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
I'm kind of blown away.
I know. It's so smart. You've also written a lot about how children experience grief very differently, and I wonder, you know, I lost my mum when I was a child. I wonder if you could talk a bit more about that and how grief affects children, and what the difference is, and how we can support ourselves as adults, perhaps.
Yeah. I think one of the important things to know, this may sound obvious now, but has not always been understood, is that children do grieve. And the idea that even if we are too young to have, you know, an adult abstract idea of death, you know, that it's permanent and so forth, we all understand separation from the moment we are born. From the moment we have a bonded relationship with someone, we understand when they're not there. Mm. And so those responses are the foundational pieces of grief, right? And so what that means is it is important to support children in their grief experience. And here's why I think that's so important. This actually applies to adults as well. But when we go through the loss of someone who is important to us, who we depend on, who we care for, we can take different information from that experience. Mm. Human beings are shockingly resilient. As difficult and painful as grief is, most of us do adapt and construct a meaningful life again after the loss of someone. But there are instances where the lessons we take away, what we learn from the loss of someone, can be something like, I'm not lovable. I wasn't worth sticking around for. Or it can be the world is an unsafe place and I can't trust anything.
Yeah.
And those are the stories that we take away that children are maybe even more likely to take away if they don't have an opportunity to talk about it. And those are the things as adults that make us very, really challenged by everything we face day to day.
Never a truer word has been spoken. I feel slightly red.
So what do we need to do? And we've had conversations with other guests about, you know, education in schools for grief. And like, I mean, we went to go and see a play the other day, which is a kid's book and an adult's book called Sad Book that discusses grief. And I guess just opening up that conversation. But so Tasha and I knew each other from primary school. And I don't remember this story, but you told me that your mum had died. And the next day you came and we had a sleepover.
Yeah.
And everyone told you, that's a lie. Your mum's not dead. And you...
Oh, Mary, this was a crazy moment. Becky was literally standing there like, it's not funny. You shouldn't be you shouldn't be lying. You know, terrible. Anyway, no, but they were all doing it. And I felt really bad. But then I'm kind of like half laughing because I'm like, no, this has genuinely happened.
And how old are you then? Sorry.
Seven. We were seven. Yeah.
So I'm just bringing up this scenario because I think this is probably quite common. I am so ashamed that I said that to you.
Oh, no, stop.
It's awful. But we weren't educated, and I didn't really know what death was as a child. So what can we do to prevent difficult situations like this happening again to other very vulnerable children?
This is such a good sign that you two have remained friends despite all this. I mean, that is right. That is friendship at its basest core. To
She's done some bad things
at one moment and be there for each other at another moment is brilliant. So I think this is some of it. Many people won't talk about death in front of children. And what that causes is for children who have very magical ways of thinking to come up with all their own ideas about how and why things are happening. Mm. So the reality is you can't say something like, mummy has gone to a better place, because then we come up with all sorts of magical ideas about, well, why does mummy want to be there and not with me? Or will I ever be sent to this better place? I don't want to go to this better place. So it's much more important to use concrete words with children to explain in a classroom, for example, what has happened and how we can be kind to one another in this time, so that everyone is sort of on the same page. Everyone has permission to talk about it. And there are some very good child resources now. Interestingly, Sesame Street in the United States has a whole, and of course everyone can get to this online, has a whole set of resources for how to talk with children about death. It's Elmo has a grief experience, and sort of walking him through that. It's brilliantly done.
That's so lovely. I'll be checking that out for my own healing journey. I just wondered, obviously, moving forward, obviously, we grow and we're no longer children. And I wonder, is there anything suggesting about grief and the long-term effects on adult children? Children, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I also, my mother died when I was 26, and so I was not a child any longer, but it has different impacts at different moments in our life, as you're saying, part of because of who we are, how we understand ourselves now, you know, in whichever decade we're in. I think one of the things that's important to know is that because our brain is really encoded that this person will always be there. I'll always be there for you. You'll always be there for me. And we think of the brain as just having one stream of information. But what we're discovering in neuroscience is that part of the problem seems to be that on the one hand, we have the memory system that tells us, yes, I was there when my loved one died, or I was there at the funeral. I know the reality of what has happened. And on the other hand, this more implicit part of our mind is relying on this attachment neurobiology that says they're still there somewhere and we should really be finding them. Now, those can't both be true. And when people experience this as adults as well, they feel like they're going crazy. They say things like, it just seems like they're going to walk through the door again. And I feel like I'm losing my mind because I know that can't be true.
Yeah.
Or they pick up the phone to call them. And the reality is, this is quite typical. This is a very common experience. Seeing someone in a crowd that you think is your loved one, or believing you are somehow responsible for their death. That's very common in children. And we explicitly have to talk with children about the fact that it is not their fault. Mm. But weirdly, we have to talk with adults about the fact that it is not their fault, because we hone in on the one thing we did or said or didn't do that could have been related to the outcome. And we can't let that one little thing go. And that can really plague us, even as adults.
And does that lead into thinking about grieving as an adult? And that kind of, I know in your study, Craving Love, Enduring Grief Activates Brain Reward Center, does that kind of lead to kind of the addiction of grief, because we're tying that love with our parents and then we're grieving at the same time? You've got that paradox there. Like, how
so
can you explain?
Smart.
Well, no, I'm just intrigued.
No, but seriously.
I'm intrigued because I'm just thinking there's definitely been times where it's taken over my life and yes. I've wanted it to become my whole personality. No, I haven't wanted it to become my whole personality, but
you feel
it,
like
has.
It should.
And yeah. It should, because it is such a big part of my life. And yes, it's because I want people to go, I'm not acting normal right now because this has happened to me, and I've really wanted to shove it in people's faces so people can understand what grief is like if you've not experienced it. But also because it's obviously going to be on my mind all the time, especially in the most recent years. So,
talk
to me.
Grief addiction.
So I write about this in my first book, The Grieving Brain. So I did the first neuroimaging study of bereaved people that came out in 2003. And then I did the first bereavement study of people who were really struggling with grief, another neuroimaging study, and this came out in 2008. And in that study, this is the one you're referring to, we discovered this part of the brain activation in this part of the brain in people who were struggling was correlated with yearning.
Mm.
So the more yearning, the more activity in this part of the brain. Now, what's important here is this is a part of the brain that drugs of abuse hijack. And we crave substances. But,
this was my next question. Yeah, how does that link?
But. So this is really important. My interpretation of this uses a metaphor now, because that's the easiest way to communicate it. Let's say that you're in the desert near Tucson, Arizona, such as I am sometimes, and you have forgotten to bring water. Mm. You forgot to bring a water bottle. And you're hiking along and you are so thirsty and you cannot think about anything else. All of your motivation is, how do I get water? Right? All of your thoughts and emotions are surrounding wanting water.
Mm.
We would never say that you are addicted to water just because you can't think about something else.
Mm.
Right? And here's the key. For human beings, for any social mammal, our loved ones are as vital to our survival as food and water.
Oh.
And so it means that when a loved one is gone, we are using this part of our brain.
Mm.
We crave them. We yearn for them. We want them to be back. We need them. And it is not addiction. If it was addiction, we would need to spend more and more and more and more time with the same person, right? To get the same. That's not how it works. You don't have to drink more and more and more and more water. You drink as much water as you need, and then you feel comfortable. You feel your thirst has been finished, right?
Mm.
Similarly, with our loved ones, we just spend time with them, and then we go back to homeostasis. Yes, I've had a shot of my loved one, and now I feel fine.
Mm.
What happens is that during grieving, we can't have that person. And we have to learn, how do I find other living loved ones in my life that can also help me to feel like I matter and I belong? How do I create these attachment relationships with additional people in my life while maintaining my memories and love and strong attachment to my deceased loved one, knowing that it is now a part of my memory?
That is so interesting.
It's fascinating.
But do you know what? What's crazy is that I always describe my grief in many formats, but specifically with personal relationships, as not being able to breathe.
Yes.
And like now when you said about the water, I was like, for me, it's always been about air, not having enough air. And then when I've, you know, with partners and whatever, where you've, where you find love with other people, there's definitely a sense of like, oh, I can breathe again.
Yeah.
This is the only, these are the only times I can breathe. And that's how it felt losing mum. I'm like just being lost all my air. Mm. And the majority of the time, when you're alone, it feels quite tricky to breathe. But when you find those moments where you get the water,
and you need, like, you're almost searching for that comfort again from in other people. Oh, and
so interesting.
I mean, does that then link into, you know, like, I don't know, trying forming other relationships after that? Because I remember after Dad died, I remember saying to Mum, "I want kids." That night, I said, "Mum, I really want a family. So I really, really need a family." And she was like, "What?" Was I going mad?
I don't.
I'm so glad I didn't go and have a family because I would not have been ready for that.
No.
But why did my brain go there?
So isn't that interesting? We think that when we are in the midst of this enormous shift where our attachment system in the brain has to understand this person is not here, it of course sort of opens us in some cases to other relationships, right? Because we see how much we need other people. This is so, but just to be super clear, what we know is that when someone is grieving, that having that social support, having people witness our experience and offer comfort and so forth, we know that's really important to them adapting well. Mm. It's also not solving the fact that we miss our loved one, right? So both can be true. So it is vitally important that we develop relationships with other living loved ones that can make us feel like we can breathe again. That's critically important to us going on and having a meaningful life. And at the same time, it's okay that we will also yearn for that one individual. Both can be true.
Mary Frances O'Connor, I do not know how I can ever end this conversation. No. This has been... You know, you are the expert. And to be honest, I think we both feel so, so honoured that you wanted to talk to us and share your insight and your findings. And I think what you've done is you've validated everything that we've been talking about the last 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had so many conversations about how we feel, you know, the ups and the downs, the roller coasters. Yeah. But what you've done is just say, and that's why. This is why. And it's okay. And have you got anything else to say, Tasha? Because
I suppose last question would just be if there's anyone dealing with grief now or has been, what would your advice be?
I think of it this way. You know, grief is the natural response that we have when we have loss. And we don't know how we're going to go through it, but we do go through it, and we do that best when we are able to find people who get it, that we can talk with, whether that's your favorite podcast hosts, whether that's your favorite author, or whether that's your grandmother or your pastor or your dog, you know. So I think just remembering that whatever you're experiencing, it's probably pretty typical, even though it doesn't feel typical to you, and trying to reach out and find someone that you can talk about it with to learn if others have felt that way as well.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Beautifully put. We're going to go to a break and we'll definitely debrief after. But have a lovely rest of your day and thank you so, so much for joining us. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Foo Bar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay. On paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
You're listening to Foo Bar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Foo Bar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Foo Bar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The Foo Bar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach. So I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind. And it blew us out to sea. Faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson. From these guys. The crew. Who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
Moira Higgins,
that's a Geordie Shaw thing,
has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, things were double damaged by COVID.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Wow, wow, wow. Ooh. Mary Frances O'Connor. I mean, I don't know if I'm more excited about the fact that she could be a scientist.
I feel like I shouldn't have called her that.
Or
I feel like I should have, like, reined that in. You know, but anyway.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't listen back.
No, no, she'll love it.
But seriously, we had to have a moment there, really, to just process what we heard.
No, do you know what it is? It's sometimes, I think, and I don't mean this to sound insulting to you,
but
you know, who are we? We're just, you know, we're just two
nobodies,
25-year-olds figuring it out. We don't know what we're talking about, really. I mean, we do because of experience, but she has a background in academic freaking science, and she's telling us,
are
clever, and you guys are right. You guys have figured it all
out.
You're the ones that are doing it correct, you know?
Yeah.
Like, doing it correct, isn't it? Like, what the fuck is wrong
with
me?
But that's what I mean. That's what's so interesting, is that I suddenly feel like we have... There's proof. There's proof about what we've talked about.
Yeah.
And we've, like you said before, we've just been chatting... shit.
Well, it's experience, isn't it? And the difference is that, like, she's done studies about this stuff. She's watched an MRI of people's brains. She's watched, you know, literal scans as people grieve, and she's seen that there's a correlation between the physical and the emotional.
And what I think's really fascinating, and people are going to tell me to shut up because I keep going on about it, but grief is held in our bodies.
Yeah.
How do we release it?
Breathing.
Yeah.
God damn it. Her and her breathing.
And yoga.
But this is the thing. Hey, isn't it funny that my metaphor for grief is about not being able to breathe and I struggle with breath work? Like, I struggle to accept it. How weird is that?
Because you need to go through the process of trying to breathe properly.
And maybe I'm just kind of like...
You're holding it, you're suppressing it.
I'm holding it in a bit.
Trust me.
Not that I don't love breath work, like I've done it, but I do like, it's like, you know, it's like, you know when you don't want to go for a run, but you know you really should? Like...
It's like that.
That's not that I run. Sorry.
God.
I just was using Becky as an example because I know she does run. I do not run. I swim. That's
yeah.
That's
but it's 6 a.m. The alarm's gone off. You really don't want to go for a swim.
You're like looking you through your eyes, and you're like, "Oh my god, I couldn't think of anything worse." But that's how I feel about breath work. I literally am like, "Oh god," because maybe I need to do some more of it. Because if my metaphor for grieving is not being able to breathe on my own, Well, that sounds problematic to me, if you ask me. Sounds like some suppressed trauma you got going on there, kiddo.
I have a question.
Yeah, please.
When you were seven and your mum died, what do you think? What do you think would have been? How do I phrase this? After having discussed, you know, grief within children. And how we should be treating children, how we should be having conversations with children about grief. What do you wish that you'd had at that age, if you remember?
Mum? sorry, no, I'll answer the question seriously.
One thing I
okay. Excuse me. I think my situation is very specific, obviously, as they all are, but my dad really struggled emotionally. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he did. He's not listening. It's fine. He struggled emotionally, and that was really hard to deal with. I felt for a long time as though I wasn't really being looked after, but I was looking after a parent. And I don't think, you know, I don't really blame him for that anymore, but it is hard to deal with. So personally, the biggest thing was the other mums. Like, should we shout out some mums? Wendy Alloway, Marianne Amos, freaking legends. Dawn! Okay, great. Your mum was great. You know, like, all the mummies were great. Libby's parents, like, I mean, I was...
Having
Gina,
someone
Linda,
to...
like, yeah. Linda Bummer, like, all those mums, like, all the mums of my friends were the women who kind of literally just, like, looked after me. And actually, I think there's a funny thing about, like, you know, often those mums were the ones that maybe were a bit more stern or a bit more like stiff when it came to kind of like, you know, routine and regimen. But actually, that's kind of what I needed. I wanted to have dinner at 6 every day.
Yeah.
I desperately wanted that. I wanted there to be food on the table. I wanted to be told to go to bed. I wanted to be told to brush my teeth because I was like, I hate this whole feeling of just floating in the air. Mm. And I feel like, when it came to school, oh blimey, I mentioned last week that I had some play therapy. We didn't actually get into it, but our primary school where Becky and I went, they had, I think it was through school, they had me and Tabs go to play therapy, which I didn't really understand was therapy, but I kind of copped on that, like, she was trying to figure out if I was all right all the time, and I was like, she, like, made me play with a bunch of Playmobiles. And
on your own?
No, with her. Okay. Like, on my own and her. And then she just go, and I did, there was just a box of, like, fun things. And then she's like, I'd be, like, burying Playmobiles as they were all, like, I don't know. And she'd be like, why are you burying the Playmobiles, Tash? And I'd be like, I don't know, Linda, like, not Linda, Sandra, whatever her name was. I'd be like, I don't know, just for fun, isn't it? And then at one point, this is quite cute, but, like, I decided to make a kite because I found some sticks that really, like, just fit together really nice. So I brought them in. I was like, I want to make a kite because it's really nice pink paper. I want to make a kite out of it. And she then kind of encouraged me to go outside and let it go.
Okay.
And I thought that. And then looking back as an adult, I'm like, right, okay. Like, she's trying to make me let go of everything.
Is that not quite good?
I think that as a kid, I just need to be told, maybe. In a way, I felt a bit weird because I was taken out of IT on a Friday.
Yeah,
and shouldn't be segregated. Do you know what's weird is that I remember being able to see you guys at the same time, and you guys could see me. So what? You remember where the IT room was, and then there was the little Sen cupboard, basically.
Yes, I do.
You didn't go to the Sen cupboard because Becky's, like, you know, normal. But anyway, so, like, they'd all come in, and then I'd be, like, taken off, and I could see you guys coming in through the door and the window. And, like, it was just, I think the cutting off from my friends was probably a bit more. And to be fair, you'd be surprised about how many parents actually did ask us not to hang out with them. Like, so I won't name names, but there were parents who told my dad, we don't want Tabby and Tash to hang out with our kids anymore because they've been talking about how their mums died, and we don't want to know about that yet. And, like, you know, I mean, it's classic Tunbridge Wells, to be honest, but, like, you know, that was really hard for my dad. It was people who were friends with my mom.
And it's like Mary Frances was saying, you know, this is kind of when you're searching for security and you're searching for love.
And people are telling you
you're people are doing the opposite.
Shit.
Yeah, that's just not cool.
And then I think as well, like, I was often put in groups with kind of the kids with other behavioural issues that weren't grief. And I was kind of put in that little box, and that's not helpful either, because then I was kind of classed as the angry girl. Yeah. And then it was like,
it was just labelling. Like, it should be an open conversation in a classroom about, you know, what is death? What have you, what you've gone through, and what other people go through, and so that everyone's aware of it, so people like me don't ask stupid questions. I'm actually really pissed off. I'm hoping things have changed.
Well, yeah, but you've got to remember, we just watched Ratatouille. We at the cinema. We were all buzzed on fruit pastels, and I'm like, yo guys, my mum's dead, and you guys are like seven, and you're guys, that is impossible, there's no way that your mummy is dead,
mummies don't die.
Which, and I remember, I just remember a couple of, it's not funny, Tash, that's really not funny, you shouldn't be joking about that. Look at me now, look who's laughing now, guess who is joking about it still.
Wow.
Anyway.
Thanks, Tash. Thank you so much, Mary Frances O'Connor, for joining us.
Thank you, Mary. What amazing. What a queen, that girl.
An amazing guest to have on.
Quite proud of you today.
I'm proud of us. Me?
Yeah, you're very smart today.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks. So are you, apparently.
Well, that's what Mary said.
Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. Back next week at 5 p.m. with more fun.
And death.
Woo! Bye. Foo Bar Radio.